United States Inlet Drift Association and Cook Inlet Fishermen's Fund versus National Marine Fisheries Service, US DOJ, 25-5523 is the next matter on for argument. All right, each side has 20 minutes, and I'm looking at my calendar, and while I see more than two people at council table, it's my understanding there's no splitting of time. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you. All right, we're ready.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Connor Smith for appellants, who I'll collectively refer to this morning as USITA. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal. The question presented by this appeal is whether the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS, may satisfy its planning obligations under the Magnuson-Stevens Act for the Cook Inlet salmon stocks by omitting from its plan the predominant fishing on those stocks. Congress definitively answered this question no. It required NMFS to create a plan for any fishing for the stocks that NMFS determined require conservation and management. NMFS believes it is entitled to disregard this plain statutory text. NMFS asserts that what USITA really wants is this court to order NMFS to implement management measures in state waters. But this is a straw man. USITA fully agrees that the state regulates state waters. The remedy USITA seeks runs to NMFS, not Alaska. NMFS also asserts that its obligation to create a plan for the fishery is qualified by Alaska's willingness to cooperate. This is false. NMFS planning obligation is unqualified, and state cooperation is a separate question.
Well, this has gone through a few iterations. We were at 12, 14, and now we're at 16, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what, but it seems that we're doing some statutory interpretation of the MSA here, or some textual looking at the text. So what operative text and the MSA prohibits the agency from taking its own jurisdictional limitations into considerations of whether a given grouping of fish is capable of being managed together as a single unit?
Your Honor, the question Your Honor asked about grouping stocks together into a management unit falls under 16 U.S.C. Section 1802. 13, which is the definition of a fishery. That's a conjunctive definition. It has Part A and Part B. Under Part A, NMFS has discretion to identify stocks and group them together in a management unit. There's a list of characteristics at subsection A that NMFS can look at when exercising that discretion and determining how stocks can be grouped together as a management unit. But once that management unit is set, the statute says, and any fishing for such stocks. The management unit is a group of stocks, and Congress required NMFS to incorporate any fishing for those stocks in its fisheries management plan. NMFS has no discretion to eliminate this plain statutory text. Your Honor mentioned that this case calls on the court to interpret the statute. USITA agrees. When a statute is plain, the role for the court is simply to read the language and apply that language and enforce it.
So let me ask you, if this is hypothetical, and I know you won't agree with this conclusion, so you don't have to spend any time telling me why that would be wrong, but hypothetically, and I don't know this for a fact because we don't conference on these cases before we come here. If we were to conclude that the MSA allows for a quote-unquote fishery to be defined with regard for jurisdictional boundaries consistent with Amendment 16, can you still prevail on any of your arguments based on the national standards?
Yes, Your Honor, under three of our arguments. The first is the optimum yield argument. We argue that three ways. The first way we argue that is that by setting optimum yield, it's not set for the fishery, which is required by the plan. Optimum yield is also required to be based on maximum sustained yield. That comes from the optimum yield definition in 1802-33 at subsection B. Here, maximum sustained yield was set at the stocks of fish throughout their range. Optimum yield was set only for EEZ harvest. We submit that that violates the plain text of that definition. In addition, this court and...
Is that a de novo argument, or is that a arbitrary and capricious argument?
That's a de novo argument, Your Honor. The reason that's a de novo argument is because it requires this court to interpret and apply that definition to the language in the record that's undisputed.
Because you also dispute the optimum yield analysis, correct?
We do. That's the third portion of our optimum yield argument, which is that this court in reversing in 2016 required a lawful fisheries management plan for the fishery and said that NIMS could not continue to defer to the state. We'd submit that the optimum yield metric established here continues that pattern of deferral. I'd like to get back.
Well, if I could ask, don't they have different definitions? So it's okay. I mean, as I understand your argument, is that they mix and match definitions of fish between optimum yield and maximum sustainable yield. Is that your argument?
They mix and match definitions of the fishery in quotes, as that term is defined in the statute, Your Honor.
Right. And so, but they have different definitions, right? The two, maximum yield and optimum yield.
Maximum yield and optimum yield have different definitions.
Right. So it's okay to have two different, fish considered, or two different definitions considered.
Your Honor, the definition of fishery is consistent in the Act. It's defined consistently, and then it's applied consistently at 16 U.S.C. 1853A3. NIMS is required to set maximum sustained yield, a defined term, and optimum yield, a defined term, for the fishery, a defined term. So maximum sustained yield is accomplishing something. Optimum yield is accomplishing something else. But both of those metrics are accomplishing their purpose for the fishery, a defined term. This brings us back to the plain statutory text of the fishery, subsection B, any fishing for the stocks. And I want to comment, Your Honor, on your comment about taking into account the jurisdiction. What UCEDA fully agrees that NIMS is entitled to take into account its jurisdiction in managing the fishery, but the Magnuson-Stevens Act explains how this has to be done. And NIMS's own guidelines interpreting the Act reiterate how this has to be done. Jurisdiction was one of the main concerns that Congress had in mind, that Senator Ted Stevens had in mind when this legislation was passed. If the court looks at 16 U.S.C. Section 1801, Congress talked about the anadromous species, salmon, and other renewable resources that live off the coasts of the states, and explained, and this is at A6 of that statute, that a national program for the conservation and management of fishery resources of the United States is necessary to prevent overfishing, to rebuild overfished stocks, to ensure conservation. Congress was well aware that stocks of fish move throughout jurisdictions. A jurisdictional excuse to avoid accounting for the predominant fishing is exactly what Congress was trying to avoid with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. This court's decision in Oregon Trollers gets to the point.
But Congress, directly defines stock of fish to include graphical grouping or other categories of fish capable of management as a unit.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, that's as broad of a discretion that's been given to the to the government as possible in defining these stocks.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Oregon Trollers, that we essentially held that the MSA does not require a biological unit of fish to be managed together as one stock of fish. And so isn't it what you're asking us to say here, that salmon in Cook Inlet must be managed together on the basis of biology?
Your Honor, there's no question about what the stocks of fish are here. In their brief on appeal, NIMS explained that the stocks of fish are the biological Cook Inlet salmon stocks in Cook Inlet throughout their range. That those are the stocks. We acknowledge under Oregon Trawlers and under the definition of stocks that NIMS has discretion in identifying those stocks, in grouping those stocks together as a management unit. Even a geographical unit, if geographical is not jurisdictional, even a geographical unit, if that's supported in the record. But the question before the court is not what are the stocks of fish. The question is, after NIMS has exercised its discretion under subsection A, what does NIMS have to do after that?
And well, before you get that, I thought you I thought you are challenging the stock of fish because you're saying harvested fish equals the fish actually harvested, and they're saying it's fish historically harvested.
Before the district court, there was a dispute about what the stocks of fish are. For purposes of this argument, my colleague has NIMS has taken the position that the stocks in the record are the full biological stocks. We don't think the language reads that way, but for purposes of our argument, the stocks have been chosen. They've taken that position on appeal. If my colleague would like to get up and speak about that, and I can respond to that. But those are the stocks of fish, and so all we're talking about here is whether or not we enforce what Congress wrote at subsection B, or we allow NIMS to disregard it.
So this, I always like to kind of know what happens on the ground and what is the actual effect of things, and not to in any way discredit your clients. I don't think your clients really care about the text that much. What is the actual effect on them by this interpretation? Why are they unhappy? What are they? What? How are they being hurt?
Unlike other clients who haven't lived with this for decades, perhaps my clients do care more about the text. But how are they being?
That way.
I know. I understand. Yeah, it's
the
just
practical effects of the people.
That's right. The practical effects are that the fish and the fishery is being harmed by the lack of a national perspective. In Oregon Trawlers, if the court looks at page 1121, there's a long block quote that talks about why it's so critical to have a national perspective when managing stocks of fish that move through jurisdictions. The court described state-to-state separation of powers that's not reflective of the migratory patterns of salmon. Inconsistent regulations that are interfering with the comprehensive management. Congress is the one that passed National Standard 3 that said stocks should be managed as a unit to the extent practical. Congress is the one that declared anadromous fish species to be a renewable and important.
So if it's national, how does that to the benefit of your clients?
A national perspective is required. Well, first of all, it's to the benefit of my clients because it's lawful and it's what Congress ordered. But under
I'm trying to get to the nitty gritty here, and Alaska is unusual in that you have state waters, you have federal water, you have It's Alaska. That's all I can say.
under 16 USC 1851,
Could you please respond to the question the judge?
Yes, of course.
Don't quote statutes, don't quote language. Tell us the practical results of the that are hurting your clients. Dollars and cents.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Where they fish, how much they get, all of that. Yeah.
I understood Your Honor's question, and I apologize if I'm not responding to it correctly, but I understood Your Honor's question to be asking for what's the practical benefit to my client. And I was pointing the court to the national standards, which require the national standards which require the fishery to be managed available to the best available science, and set a bunch of firm standards that provide a benefit. So the benefit to my clients is that currently there's a division in Cook Inlet between where they can fish and where they can't. They're prohibited from fishing on the same days. If it's extremely stormy in federal waters, that's the only day they get to fish. Whether or not fishing could happen better in state waters, there's declarations in the record from my clients.
So is it just bottom line that your clients disagree with the way Alaska as a state manages the water?
Bottom line, Bottom line is essentially yes. Yes.
You want to federalize it so that we're taking it out of the Alaska's jurisdiction and making it a federal jurisdiction.
That's not exactly right, Your Honor. We don't want to federalize it. Nothing about what the relief sought here would stop the state from enforcing management measures in state waters as it sees fit. There would just be a national plan, and that's what Congress ordered is a national plan. And I realize I'm running up against my rebuttal time here.
I'd like to reserve the balance.
I would. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, John Smeltzer for the National Marine Fisheries Service, or NMFS. Your Honors, NMFS properly limited Amendment 16 to the EEZ based on the jurisdictional limits in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and the limitations were also consistent with National Standard 3 and with this Court's decision in UCEDA 1. Amendment 16 is also consistent with the National Standard 1 with respect to optimum yield and National Standard 2 with respect to best available science. I'm going to focus most of my time on the question of the scope of the fishery management plan because that, I believe, to your question, Judge Callahan, answers most of the questions, if not all of the questions before the Court today.
Well, it seems that the association, and I'm sure they'll correct me if I'm interpreting their argument wrong, that that you should manage salmon outside of your jurisdiction and in state waters. In your view, do you have legal authority to do so?
No, Your Honor. The simple answer is no, that the Magnuson-Stevens Act has strict jurisdictional limits on federal fisheries management authority, right?
And so even if you had some legal basis to do so, would it be practicable to enforce such a FMP, I guess what you call FMP, that included fish harvested in state waters?
What you're referring to is the term practicable, and that comes from National Standard 3. And that national standard sets a rule that we submit is effectively a rule of co-management. There is a strict jurisdictional limit on where the council and NMFS can apply its management authority, and that's the EEZ federal waters. But National Standard 3 also recognizes that stocks of fish move between jurisdictions, and it says to the extent practicable, councils and NMFS should manage an individual stock throughout its range. But that national standard recognizes, of course, that there is a jurisdictional limit, right? And then the question is it practicable? And what we submit that means in practice is that the councils and NMFS have an obligation to work with the state as a co-manager of the fishery and to see if it's practicable to set national goals for the fishery as a whole that the state and the federal waters can be managed under, right? And there's
a lot of times the feds in Alaska are not aligned. Where are we now on this case?
I'm sorry, the feds are not aligned. You mean with the state or
state? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, and that's what fundamentally NMFS determined in this case. It wasn't practicable to have an overall management plan that would be co-managed with the state because the state declined to do that. Right? NMFS reached out to the state, and it's clear from the record that NMFS wanted primarily, or their preference was to have a unit of management, the whole area that would be co-managed with the state and that would delegate management authority to the state so that the fishermen wouldn't have to go to two different managers to get their permits, to get their season limits, to deal with the regulatory requirements of the management regime. The state declined to do that, right? And the reason the state declined to do it gets a little bit into the weeds of what it means to manage fish in Cook Inlet, but as an overview, the state doesn't have an annual catch limit, right? The Magnuson-Stevens Act requires fishery management plans to be managed in accordance with an overfishing limit and with an annual catch limit and other criteria, harvest criteria, that are specific to determining what can be caught in advance before the season opens. That's not how the state of Alaska manages state waters. The state manages state waters through an escapement regime, where they monitor, escapement means the amount of salmon that are able to run up a river, right? The number that get out of the ocean and get away from all the fishing and are able to get up a river to spawn. So there's some very sophisticated escapement monitoring that the state does, and that they do seasonal closures and area closures based on their escapement monitoring. They don't
talk about Oregon Trawlers Association, that particular case. Your colleague on the other side, your friend on the other side, stated certain things about what it stands for. And I'm wondering, to the extent that that particular case stated that political boundaries should not overly constrain fishery management units, do you believe that the case precludes all consideration of agency jurisdiction and state authority?
No, Your Honor. I mean, that what you're referring to is the guideline, the advisory guideline that has that language about political boundaries shouldn't overly constrain management, right? And that's the guideline with respect to National Standard 3. And National Standard 3 is the standard with the term practicable, and right. And what I was discussing with respect to practicable, and I'm sorry for getting in the weeds about escapement versus annual catch limits, but what I was trying to explain to the court was that there's a fundamental difference in the methodology that the state has used and that the federal government is required to use in state waters versus federal waters. And I believe that explains to some degree the state's unwillingness to have its management of its waters subject to Magnuson-Stevens Act federal oversight and review. So they didn't want delegated authority, and they didn't want to work on overall annual catch limits for the fishery because they don't believe that's the right way to manage the fishery. In developing the federal plan, NIMS takes into account the way that state manages and escapement monitoring targets and the actual data from escapement monitoring to determine annual catch limits, overfishing limits for the federal waters. So we fully take into account.
In my brief, the association kind of levels an accusation against you, I guess, argues that the Amendment 16 stocks definition contradicts the SAFE report's recommended focus on biological stocks, and that your position on appeal has flipped from what it was in the district court. How do you explain that perceived change? So is there any meaningful difference between Amendment 16's definition and the SAFE report's recommendation? If so, where in the record is the explanation for the supposed difference?
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't think there is any meaningful difference. The SAFE report that's referred to is the very first SAFE report, and that stands for Status Assessment and Fishery Evaluation, and it's a report that's done annually with respect to the fishery management plan to determine the harvest specifications for the fishery. And in this case, the SAFE report was determined the harvest specifications for the federal fishery, just the EEZ, and that includes the overfishing limit and the total allowable, or the annual catch limit, excuse me, for the federal fishery. It was always focused on just the federal fishery. There was no recommendation by the SAFE team to have the annual catch limit or the other status determination criteria be developed for the entirety, for the state waters plus the federal waters. They were always focused on the federal waters. It's just an issue of nomenclature as to how they were defining the specific terms that were used to measure. And again, we're in the weeds, but they were defining specific terms. No, Your Honor. We're trying to explain difficult scientific criteria that were set out by the SAFE team, right, in order to determine the harvest specifications for the federal fishery in the EEZ. The fishery management plan accepted the recommendation of the SAFE report as to how to do it. There's not, when they talk about definitional differences, there really isn't one. The scope of the SAFE report for purposes of harvest specifications was always the EEZ. The scope of the plan is always the EEZ. And again, the case for here is really about what governs the scope of the plan. And so stepping back to that, right, it's the jurisdiction. It's the jurisdictional limitations plus National Standard 3 and interpreted in accordance with the mandate. And so with the court's indulgence, it's important to understand the specific sections of the statute because it's a statutory interpretation that set out those limits. So if you look at Section 1811A, right, that's the section that where Congress is determining its authority, what it's setting under the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And it specifically claims exclusive fishery management authority in the EEZ, right? In the EEZ, in the ocean waters off the territorial boundaries of the state waters. In 1811B, Congress also talked about anadromous fish, and they took a particular interest in anadromous fish, but there they talked about asserting jurisdiction over anadromous fish beyond the EEZ, that is, international waters outside of 200 miles, right? That was what they were doing. In 1811, when Congress claims its jurisdiction for purposes of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, Congress does not claim any jurisdiction within state waters. The other aspect to bear in mind with respect to jurisdiction is Section 1852A1G. That's the section that gives the jurisdiction to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, the council at issue in this case. And again, what that specifically says is it gives that council authority over the fisheries in the Pacific Ocean, in the Arctic Ocean, and in the Bering Sea outside of the limits of state waters, right? So again, it's talking about fisheries in the EEZ. The other aspects of jurisdiction or the statutory provisions in the statute that deal with jurisdiction is Section 1856, which is where it specifically states that the Magnuson-Stevens Act does not interfere with the jurisdiction of the states. Right? Traditionally, states have full authority over the fish and wildlife within their borders. That only changes with respect to federal authority if Congress asserts federal authority over that area. And what 1856 says is 1856A1 says that nothing in the statute is to be construed as diminishing state authority in state waters. So it's a hard break, right? There's exclusive federal jurisdiction in federal waters, exclusive state jurisdiction in state waters. The other important part of Section 1856 is 1856A2, right? That talks about specifically what are state waters, and A2 addresses pockets of water, which means inlets and bays off the coast of a state. And that section says that state jurisdiction extends within an inlet or a bay to a closing line that determines the extent of the territorial sea, right? So if you look in the map in the United States brief at page 7, which comes from the record in the fishery management plan, you can see that most of the Cook Inlet area that's at issue here is state water, even though those waters are more than 3 miles off the coast, right? Because of this closing line. And that closing line makes...
Do you mind addressing your friend's concern about the disconnect between the maximum sustainable yield and optimum yield and why they're consistent here?
Your Honor, that's a question concerning National Standard 1, right, which requires the plan to be managed in accordance with optimum yield, which is a defined term. And then the guidelines, NIMS guidelines also say that these are the advisory guidelines under 1851B, which don't have the force of law, but the guidelines say that the optimum yield should be based on maximum sustained yield. And what the NIMS determined in this case was maximum stain yield was a biological marker that should follow the stocks of the fish consistent with National Standard 3, which says if it's practicable to co-manage, right? So what NIMS is doing is making sure that for purposes of setting the optimum yield within the fishery, right, it has to have an optimum yield for the plan. So that has to be set at the fishery level. That's what the statute says. You have to have an optimum yield for the fisheries within the EEZ. The fishery in the EEZ is the defined EEZ area. So that's why optimum yield has to be set there. But to set optimum
is geographic based, you would say. Well,
it's fishery based.
Fishery based, yeah.
Which it's is based on the limits of the
geographic though,
right
it?
Here. Yes, yeah, yes.
Okay, and then maximum yield is biologically based.
Well, it's based on the range of the relevant stocks that use the fishery.
Right, but the fish are defined by their biology versus geography or fish range or things
like that? For the most part, I mean, what NIMS recognizes is that the stocks that are in the federal fishery have a range that go beyond the federal fishery, right? And so to properly set the optimum yield, they have to deal with the fishery, but they also have to understand what happens outside the fishery in state waters. So the maximum yield is determined based on what happens in state waters because it's used as part of the formula to determine the annual catch limit and the other harvest specifications that are used in the plan.
But maybe, all right, to just sort of focus this down to, you discourage us from going into the weeds, but we have to sometimes, or we're capable of it if we need, you know, it's a little bit like talking to a PhD. They kind of tell you, well, you can't possibly understand this. Well, we have to, okay, in order to make a decision. So we can. But your friend on the other side is proposing another way to calculate this, and NIMS has selected its own way of doing it. Is that a legal determination, or is it a discretionary determination? What are the standards of review? Could you do it the way they want you to if you determined that was?
I think NIMS determined that it wasn't practicable to set standards such as the annual catch limit and overfishing limit that are required under the MSA for the entire federal fisheries and state fisheries because the state declined to cooperate.
So what is our standard of review to review that, whether it's practicable or not?
I think ultimately that's discretion to NIMS with respect to determination of the plan because the Fishery Council or NIMS
capricious standard?
Abuse of discretion, Your Honor.
Okay. Abuse of discretion.
Or arbitrary, I don't know how it differs.
He's saying it's de novo. Am I wrong?
Well, he's saying it's de novo with respect to what accounts for the scope of the management plan. And what the plaintiffs say is that the definition of fisheries accounts for the scope of the management plan. And what we're saying is that the term fishery is flexible. Right there, you could use the term fishery to talk about the entire Cook Inlet salmon fishery, but it's also perfectly consistent with the definition of fishery to talk about just the EEZ fishery. And again, the authority that is given to NIMS and to the council is just the fisheries within federal waters. Right, so NIMS has to look at the fisheries within federal waters. Right, and the term fisheries is sufficiently elastic to allow for that. The issue for NIMS is, right, and that was the issue in OCEDA, right, where this court, OCEDA 1, where this court said there was no dispute that there was a fishery in the EEZ area, right, and you look to the definition to see why, right, you look to the definition and do you have one or more stocks of salmon in the federal EEZ, Cook Inlet EEZ? Answer is yes. Check that box. Then you say, do you have one or more types of fishing? Or any fishing is the statutory term. Any fishing in the EEZ? Yes, you do. You have the commercial drift gillnet fishing in the EEZ, and you have sport fishing in the EEZ. So you have one or more stocks of fish, you have sport fishing, and you have a unit that's capable of being managed for purposes of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. That's all the fisheries definition requires.
Want to be done here? What prevents you from doing that?
It's not practicable to tell the state what their annual catch limit is when they don't manage in accordance with an annual catch limit, and they're going to disregard it. There's very specific statutory procedures
it's not practicable, which is a discretionary call.
Yes.
So if you had determined that it was practicable, then you could have done what the appellants.
Well, it would be practical if the state would agree to cooperate in national standards for the two managed areas. And that's what didn't happen here. And so it's not practical to inform, to compel the state to use Magnuson-Stevens Act standards. And ultimately, that's what the association, the Drift Association, wanted here, right? Their concern is with state management. They say state has mismanaged the state waters, which are the predominant waters. Most of the fishery is in state waters. And they say the state has mismanaged the state waters.
In which way? That they allow overfishing or underfishing?
Underfishing. They want more fish to be harvested. They want the federal definition of optimum yield to be adopted to create a higher yield, particularly for the sockeye salmon, in the state fishery. And they say the state is doing that badly. And their effort through these various amendments was to get the federal government to come in and manage the fishery. The problem with that is the federal jurisdiction stops basically at the line, the top of the closing line in Cook Inlet, and everything north of that, right, is state waters. And the mandate the court has to pay attention to, which is 1852 H, it mandates the management of waters under the authority management of fisheries under the authority of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. The North Pacific Management Council doesn't have authority over the fisheries in state water, just the fisheries in the federal EEZ, and the definition fishery is completely consistent with the way they've designed or defined the limits of the fishery and the fishery management plan. I've reached the end of my time.
Find out it's obviously this is a complicated case. If either of my colleagues have additional questions of you.
No questions.
So why don't you take a minute to wrap up then?
Key takeaway is that the definition of fishery doesn't define the scope of a management plan. What defines the scope of the management plan are the jurisdictional limits in National Standard 3. Under National Standard 3, the NIMS did not abuse its discretion or act arbitrarily in determining that it would not be practicable to manage, have co-management with the state because the state wasn't interested in that level of cooperation. With respect to the fishery, but
I'm understanding you to say at bottom line that they want the federal government to do more for once, which mostly people aren't happy to see the federal government, but they would like you. You're the feds. We're here to help. They would like you to help more.
Right. They want the federal government to come in and tell the state that it's not managing for optimum yield. We don't concede that the state isn't, so I want to be careful the state's not standing here. I don't want to throw them under the bus, but the basic goal of the plaintiffs.
You throw the person under the bus, it's not here, so that's the.
True, but I mean, that's the basic argument is that the state is not managing state waters according to optimum yield. Feds, you should bring in that optimum yield definition and impose it in state waters. That's not what National Standards 1 that talks about optimum yield requires, because that is focused on the fishery, and the scope of the fishery is not dictated by the definition of fishery.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for your argument. Welcome back.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to respond to a few of the points that my colleague made.
I want to respond to the flip-flop argument that you've made in your reply brief against them. Can you explain that, or
yes,
do you have another? Did he flip? Did the feds flip on you?
Your Honor, we submit that before the district court, they took the position that the stocks of fish in the Cook Inlet EEZ were merely biologically related to the stocks of fish in state waters, and then before this court, they've taken the position that the stocks are the full biological stocks for purposes of our argument. So we submit that they did flip-flop despite counsel's explanation, but for purposes of our argument, which rests on the plain text of 18...
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, because whether they've defined the stocks as just the portion of each stock in the EEZ, they still are required under the statute to include any fishing for those stocks. If they define them biologically, as we submit, they've always been defined in this case, they're still required to include any fishing for such stocks. Council mentioned that there's nothing about the fishery definition that sets the scope of the geographic scope of fisheries management plans. We would submit that This argument's incorrect, and it's been raised to this court before. In the UCITA 1 decision, the court said the government argues that 1852H1 does not expressly require a fisheries management plan to cover an entire fishery, noting that the provision says nothing about the geographic scope of plans at all. This court responded, but the statute requires an FMP for a fishery, a defined term. We would submit that the proper place for this court to look for the scope of a fisheries management plan is what this court already stated, which is the definition of a fishery. Council makes a lot of the discretion that Congress gave NIMPS under subsection A of the fishery definition. Again, we do not dispute that NIMPS has that discretion.
Well, they focus a lot of their argument on the interpretation of practicable and say that it's either that's a discretionary call. Can you respond to that? I mean, do you see the same? Do you see the same focus here? That's.
I don't, Your Honor. I don't see the same focus. There's to the extent practical shows up in the statute at National Standard 3, as my colleague said. But when we're talking about the scope of the fisheries management plan, the statute doesn't say any fishing for such stocks to the extent practicable. It doesn't say any EEZ fishing for the stocks. The plain text of subsection.
That means something. And clearly here, I mean, as we've sort of developed this argument, that if Alaska, you know, if Alaska were to agree with NIMFS here, and if they would work with NIMFS here, I'm understanding the federal government to say they could have. That's, you're asking them to do something else, and they're saying in order for them to do what you want, it would have to be practicable, and it's not here, according to them. Am I misinterpreting what they said? I don't want to look at faces over here if they shake their heads, but that's what I heard them say.
That's what I understood them to say too, Your Honor, and that really puts the cart before the horse. It says if the state will cooperate, we will do what Congress required us to do, which is to create a national plan, and then the state can cooperate with us in that plan. What Congress says is create a national plan which will facilitate the state to cooperate, right? The state has its own management regulations. Currently, the feds have carved a box and put their management regulations.
Jurisdiction is always important. I mean, I come from the Central Valley in California, and there's a lot of water disputes there. And one of the sayings that they have is, you know, whiskey's for drink and water's for fight. And when you come to Alaska and you have state and federal jurisdiction in areas like this, it seems like it is for fighting, you know? I mean, and so I'm trying to get the flexion points here.
I'd point, Your Honor, and we agree that jurisdiction is important. I'd point, Your Honor, to 1856A1, which is my colleague mentioned. And this is the statute, and my colleague left out a portion respectfully, but it says nothing about this act shall be construed as extending or diminishing the state's jurisdiction. The Magnuson-Stevens Act is essentially net neutral on the state's jurisdiction, except as provided in subsection B. And in reviewing 1856B1, which is the preemption provision, it says preemption can occur if the fishing in a fishery, which is covered by a fisheries management plan, is engaged in predominantly in the Cook Inlet EEZ, which acknowledges in the statutory text the scope of the fishery, including state waters and federal waters, and NIMS making a determination that fishing is predominantly occurring. And I'd respond further to counsel's argument. The guidelines, the case law explaining the guidelines says that they're NIMS interpretation. And 50 CFR 600-320-D1 talks about the conservation and management measures that NIMS is required to produce with its fisheries management plan. And it says that those conservation and management measures should be set for the part of the management unit within U.S. waters, although the secretary can ordinarily implement them only within the Cook Inlet EEZ. To wrap up, Your Honor, we'd submit that this court simply needs to enforce any fishing for such stocks in 1802.13b. That's the plain text of the act. NIMS does not have discretion to disregard it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Do either of you have any questions? All right. Thank you both for your argument in this matter. This matter will stand submitted. That was very helpful to the court. All right, we're going to take a 10-minute recess, and then we'll come back out and hear the last matter that's on for argument. Thank you. All right.